Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Chris Maloney on the various aspects of church safety and security.
The more gray hair and brown bellies you see tells you you're going to have a medical. So let's get ready. You know, let's be prepared. Let's get some first aid, CPR. You know, let's buy some medical equipment. Let's take common sense steps to safeguard our congregations.
Chris Maloney next. Acts of violence aimed at houses of worship, schools, and other places in our society cause people to think about security. Today's discussion focuses on the issue of church security. Stay with us for a fascinating discussion with Chris Maloney, founder of Sheepdog Church Security, which provides resources for church safety and security teams. Here's Spencer Dahlke.
Well, first question I just wanted to put to you is what you understand about the state of violence committed against the church in particularly America today.
There certainly has been an increase across the board. In fact, the Family Research Council did a study not too long ago, and they found that the number of crimes that are happening on church property and to church property had doubled over the last 2 to 3 years. And so we're seeing just this huge level of crime starting to be committed. And then the other thing, of course, that we're seeing is the increase of violence at church. And so not all of these are necessarily active shooters. That's certainly a big topic of discussion. But it's other forms of violence, right? It's domestic violence playing itself out at church. It's people with, addictions to alcohol and drugs that are acting out and becoming violent at church. There's a mental illness, obviously, becoming violent inside the church. And so, you know, one study that's out there by the FBSN, they also have been tracking violence at churches. And it's over since about 2008 to now, the graph kind of looks like the fish hook, right? It just slowly going up. And then all of a sudden, it's just going up and up and up and up and up and up. And so, yeah, this is something that churches definitely need to be tracking and start paying attention to.
Your Sheepdog Church Security Service, I think perhaps you could tell us a little bit about it, but I understand you guys help prevent, well, active shooter situations, of course, but also maybe some of these domestic violence.
So I'm former law enforcement. I spent 18 years as a police officer, most of that time working the streets as a normal patrolman. A lot of that time double duty as a crime prevention officer. I spent 21 years in the Army, went to war twice. I don't recommend it. And God, you know, I went to school for my ministry degree and got a master's in organizational leadership and those kind of things. And God has definitely called me and created me for a time like this. What he's developed in me is the ability to teach others. At the end of the day, the best people to look out for any church or any congregation are the volunteers that are there. You know, what's the scripture verse? I'm going to hammer it. But basically, there's a big difference between the hired hand who runs away when they see the wolf versus the shepherd themselves, right? And so to have and prepare safety teams or prepare volunteers to serve in a role as a safety team is what we do.
How have you seen your faith and belief in the gospel inform your team's response to threats?
Yeah, so, you know, there's a big difference between law enforcement and being a soldier versus serving a church in this capacity, right? It's a completely different approach. You know, I think about one of the reasons we call ourselves Sheepdog Church Security Academy is that I just love the picture of that sheepdog. You know, a lot of times a sheepdog is introduced, you know, as a puppy is introduced into the fold. And the sheep, of course, adopt that dog as part of them or, you know, see that dog as part of them and they grow up together. It's just a gentler approach, right? To the sheepdog, I imagine these are my brothers and sisters here. And that's different than going to war. That's different than patrolling the streets and, you know, writing tickets and arresting bad guys. You know, a big part of my faith is, hey, this is a different calling that requires a great deal of gentleness, understanding, tact, de-escalation. I was an MP in the Army, to steal their saying, we're of the troops and for the troops. That's the same thing for sheepdogs serving, safety people serving their churches. They're of the congregation and for the congregation.
Well, I understand your service is you train congregants. Is that correct? Is that accurate to say at these different churches to be security personnel?
Yeah. So we run an online academy where normal people, you know, people that are not otherwise trained in security or law enforcement, and we give them a base understanding of how they can be protectors at their church. You know, so we cover everything from patrol techniques and radio communication and report writing and situational awareness and those kind of things. We talk about violent intruder response, you know, what does the congregation should do, what the children's ministry should do, and even how a safety team might respond in that situation to ensure we save as many lives as possible. And we get into verbal de-escalation, and which is, you know, or verbal judo, whatever you want to call it. We talk about that. We teach that. We teach laws to some degree, right? Self-defense laws and the defense of other laws. Obviously, we have to cover that and less lethal use of force. Then we get into protecting the vulnerable and we go beyond children. What do we do about if there's a domestic violence victim at our church? Or what do we do about abuse of the elderly or abuse of special needs people? And unfortunately, in today's climate, we even have to talk about trafficked individuals in the church. You know, some of this, to live in this world that I live in, where I'm looking at violence that plays itself out at churches and the victims that end up in churches, not necessarily that they're victims in the church, though that does happen, but they're victims in the world. And they come to church because that's where we go, right? You know, I think about domestic violence victims. This is a big one where, you know, their life is falling apart. They're in a violent relationship and they're getting to the point where they're ready to leave or they have left their abuser. And what happens is they feel the call of Christ in their life. They feel God calling them back. And so they end up back in the church. Well, this is something that we have to think about as churches. It's not only about helping them. We need to help them, but we also then need to safeguard them, our congregation, against a very upset, violent person that could end up showing up at our church. You know, with trafficked individuals, traffickers are now recruiting at churches. They're showing up. They'll send their little henchmen in. That will be part of the children's ministry, you know, middle schoolers and high schoolers, in order to make contact that they're already working on somebody online is usually how they do their recruitment. And so there's all of these things that I live in, but here's the deal. You know, obviously we rely on God. We absolutely 100% rely on God. I love the story of King David, right? Or the future King David. When he goes up against Goliath, we know one thing for sure, right? He's completely 100% relying on God. But also, here was a guy who was very skilled and practiced with his sling. As a shepherd, he was wearing, I'm sorry, somebody's going to have to correct my biblical knowledge here, right? I mean, he's wearing fur from animals that he had killed in order to protect the sheep. He had training, if you will, or at least a lot of time practicing in that role of defending the flock. And so two things can be true at the same time. You know, we can rely and we should rely completely 100% on Christ in these situations, but also we can take reasonable steps, allow God to train us. You know, the very reason that I'm here is God sent me to the army, if you will, part of his will. Then he sends me off into law enforcement and gets the training and experience there, part of his will. Serving my own church and learning, making all the mistakes on starting a safety team. And learning from that. You know, all of this is God forming and creating for this moment to train others. And then, of course, I would say this. God doesn't raise up a guy like me and guys and gals that serve in safety teams for no reason at all. There's a shift that's going on in the country, a shift that's going on in the church, capital C, in the United States, and across the country. People are rising up, realizing that there are wolves in the world. And we are going to, one, rely on God, two, do our best to be the hands and feet of Christ, and in this sense, defending the congregation.
How can our church congregants remain above reproach and keep eyes open understanding, like you said, that we rely on God for ultimately for protection and for our hope and for our security, but also like in human terms, keeping eyes open for potential human traffickers that might be after our children or maybe even congregants that might be engaged in human trafficking.
Yeah, so most of the recruitment out of churches are actually outside people. So generally what will happen is the traffickers are constantly scouring social media and they're looking for people with a certain profile or vulnerability. Typically it's, you know, it's a young female, maybe a child of divorce. Maybe there's some abuse there, you know, signs of extreme low self-esteem, negative self-talk, or even online, they demean themselves, if you will, in the posts that they make, or extreme emotional, dark emotional stuff that they'll just put out there online. And so then what a trafficker will do is they'll make contact with that young lady. I mean, that's stereotypical, men happen too, but it's 90, you know, it's mostly women, but we'll start reaching out to her and we'll start grooming her. And the way he grooms her typically is he develops a kind of boyfriend-girlfriend relationship. And she will become convinced that, hey, this is somebody who loves me, somebody who gives me attention and is nice to me. That'll often evolve into almost love bombing, where he's really just pouring all kinds of attention at her. And sometimes that'll include gifts that could develop into ultimately meeting and continuing to be, this is my boyfriend, this is my girlfriend, and the grooming kind of continues like that. But what they're doing at churches, though, is as they're grooming this potential victim, what they'll do is they already have victims that are, for lack of a better term, brainwashed into what this guy is doing. And what they'll do is, since they tend to be young kids or look young, they'll say, listen, she goes to church at this place. What we need to do is we need to make sure that she's not developing a good support structure there. We got to chip away at that. Also, too, we need you to go in there, become her friend, and then help in the grooming process, right? So we can get her out of the church and get her trafficked. And so what they'll do is they show up and they join the youth ministry. So now as the church, what we have to do is we have to be watchful for two kinds of people. We have to be watchful for the kind of potential victim that's vulnerable to these kind of things. And then we have to look for the predator that might be there in the youth ministry only to work on that potential victim.
This may not be a charitable take, but it seems like maybe Christians can be kind of bright-eyed about the world sometimes, especially like kids that have grown up in the church and maybe like actually have really good friends, you know, that maybe everything is all right with the world, but it's not. So yeah, it's good to be, you know, aware of like people like
these. Yeah, well, good. I hear what you're saying. I think there are some Christians that are a little bit more naive about the world. And of course they would be, right? Because they're not typically exposed to this kind of stuff, right? They're very careful about the music they listen to and the media that they take in. And maybe they avoid the internet, which would be a good idea for all of us, right? And so they're not being exposed to these kind of things. And I think that's one of the reason that God, you know, raises up sheepdogs, fighters, is because we're wired just a little bit differently, right? We can take in some of this stuff and be less affected by it, probably the rest of the population, as a general rule. You know, this is obviously a generalization. And so I've been exposed to a lot of things, and certainly there has been consequences to my heart and my mind, but God also protects me to some extent. But I have a lot of conversations kind of like this one, you know, with Christians that are maybe a little bit less exposed. And they find a lot of the things I know very shocking. And sometimes it's so ugly, we can't even look at it. There are a number of people that'll slam their eyes shut. They'll just reject it. It's a denial. We could use that word. I would say it's more of just like, I can't see this. I can't hear this. You know, plug the ears and la, 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 la. I can't hear it because it's too much. I'm not saying anything bad about them. You know, there's a lot of people. I mean, statistically, 1 in 4 boys and 1 in 3 girls are assaulted before they reach the age of 18. You know, I give warning disclaimers all the time saying, listen, you know, some of your congregation, some of your audience listening to this right now are victims. This is an extremely hard thing for them to hear. We talk about some tough subjects.
My guest today is Chris Maloney. He's the founder of Sheepdog Church Security. We're talking about staying safe as church congregations from violence, both outside and inside the church. Religious persecution has kind of been a thing internationally for a long time. But like here in America, it seems like, you know, the violence being perpetrated against the Christians, like you mentioned a little earlier, has been increasing. How can Christians, in light of this trend that seems to be going this direction of violence against Christians, take courage in living dangerously for the gospel?
I think what it really comes down to is, you know, we have the church has lived in a kind of a privileged, I know that's a trigger word, but we've been very privileged in the United States, right? The church has for a long time was held up as an institution that you generally did not publicly attack politicians, community leaders, the media, even television was very careful not to attack the church or be seen as attacking the church. I think about when I was a little kid, you know, the church was unlocked 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And back then I wasn't saved and it never occurred to me or any of my friends to go into the church and mess around in there. But what's happened since then is there's a shift going on. And maybe it's some things that happened in some churches that were bad. They were national news, stuff like that. Whatever the trigger point was, there became more and more courage of the media and movies and television and community leaders and politicians to talk out against the church. And I'm all for freedom of speech, but what that does do is there's a certain population that is either, I mean, there's a couple things, you know, we could have kind of our Venn diagram, you know, the world is evil. It's filled with evil people. And all the evil people need oftentimes is a little nudge in the right direction and they're going to do something. You know, the same thing applies, you know, now you add mental illness in there. Now they have mental illness going on in their hearts as well. Evil, now mental illness. Then you have extreme ideologies that come in, and there's way too many places on the internet to become an extremist about whatever the issue is. And then, of course, now you have the church. What a great target for evil. What a great target for ideologies against Christianities, against, you know, and against the church, you know, and all these things kind of come together. And for some people, that's enough. And that's where the violence takes place. And so what can we do? God is in control, number one. The second thing that we can do is this. There's a lot to be said for an ounce of prevention worth a pound of cure. There are things that we can do, common sense stuff, that can reduce the risk of churches being a victim of any sort of crime. We look, you know, both ways before they cross the street. We put Band-Aids on little cuts. We do all these things in our lives. We have insurance, probably car insurance, home insurance. We take all these reasonable steps. We have smoke detectors in the house. We take all these reasonable steps to safeguard ourselves at home and in the world at large. Let's bring that idea into the church now. Let's do some common sense stuff to reduce crime and reduce the chances of us getting hurt. Once again, it's God and us just applying a little sense. We'll be fine.
Well, it's Proverbs, I think, that the heart of a man plans his way, but the Lord establishes the steps. One thing I thought is very unique about Christians is our approach to dying. Because we have hope in the gospel that Jesus Christ himself has been raised from the dead and death has been destroyed. So it as part of the curse of sin, we know that one day death will lose its grip on us. But that still doesn't really take away how horrible it is. I mean, scripture talks about death as an enemy. What are your thoughts about how Christians can take a page from the book of the early church, living well while also being unafraid to die?
Yeah, I mean, that's quite the question, isn't it? Yeah. You know, this comes down again to, you know, God has called you for a reason and for a purpose. And while the end is the end, well, you know, death is now the transition to eternity in heaven, but, you know, certainly that's going to be there for all of us. But God has a reason and a purpose for us. And we should not, you know, we should know a couple things. One is God's will be done in your life. Whatever he wants to accomplish will be accomplished. As you, you know, seek him, you know, how's the verse go? Is God who works in you the will and to work according to his good purposes? I probably hammered that too. But anyway, it's close enough. God's going to work out his will in your life. And we can do that trusting him and believing him, and it will be completed in the end. Death is out there. It's going to happen, but we don't have to fear it because God's will be done. That's the important thing. What has he called you to do? You can trust that he will bring that to the end. On the other hand, too, that doesn't mean we run off towards dangerous situations, right? We don't test God, right? We don't stand on the top of the temple and throw yourself down because God will save you by angels. We don't play that. Christ didn't play that. We're not playing that. You know, I'm not going to jump in my car and drive 120 miles an hour down the highway and say, God's going to save me. The same thing is I'm also going to put on my seatbelt anytime I get into the car. Why? Because in some way we participate with God for his purposes. And so in the case of protecting and safeguarding our churches, hey, let's participate in saving lives. Let's participate in saving people from getting hurt. We don't even have to talk about active shooters. There's plenty of other kinds of violence, more likely violence to occur. Let's be part of the solution, the hands and feet of Christ, right? Faith without works is dead. Have faith that God will protect you. But if you don't move your hands and feet, I don't want to accuse you of standing on top of the temple and throwing yourself off of it, but we may be getting close to that if we don't take reasonable steps.
You've talked about, like, you know, taking reasonable steps, and I'm sure there's like a whole, like you said, like a whole program to like train some of these individuals. For our listeners who are like listening, could you maybe give us a taste on like what some of those steps might be? Like, what practical steps could especially small churches take to be prepared for possible visits by an active shooter?
Every church right now could do this next Sunday. And that's this. I call it the rapid team. And what the rapid team is simply this, is you get a group of people together that are wired like you, a safety-minded person. You give them two instructions. Instruction number one is this. Your job is going to be patrolling the church grounds before, during, and after the services. And what you're looking for, number one, is you're looking for anything suspicious or an emergency. If you see something suspicious or there's an emergency, you take out your cell phone, you call 911, and let the police deal with it. Rule number two, or instruction number two, is don't do anything you haven't been trained to do. We're not looking for heroes. We're not looking at it. If you've not been trained, don't do anything. Every single church could do that, and the level of safety at the church, just by doing that, skyrockets. Because a lot of crimes that happen at churches on Sundays or during events is because nobody was paying attention. Not one person was paying attention. There's a horrible story out of a church in Tennessee where it was an Easter event, and a young man was left the service to go use the bathroom. Unbeknownst to him and unknown to anyone else, a bad guy had come into the church, went into the bathroom, and waited for a victim. And when this young man went in there, he was assaulted, drug out of the bathroom, and left in a stairwell, and he was undiscovered for over an hour. I like to think that if somebody was paying attention, they would have saw this guy come in. Now, somebody coming in during a service is not that big of a deal. But we make note of the late arriver. He goes into the bathroom. He's in there for 10, 15, 20 minutes. However long, I like to think we would have noticed that and maybe gone in there to wash our hands to see what's going on. Certainly, we might have even seen the young man go into that bathroom saying, hey, there's a young man in there with an adult male. Maybe we go in there to wash our hands to make sure everything's okay. If we don't catch that process, maybe we catch him dragging a body out of the bathroom. If we miss that even, and we're patrolling the back hallways, the back stairwells, I like to think he wouldn't have sat there for over an hour. My point is simply this. Somebody's got to pay attention. If nothing else, let's pay attention. So a rapid team, patrol, call 911 if you see something suspicious or emergency, and don't do anything you haven't been trained to do, that's a big game changer right then and there. Mm-hmm. And then I would say, well, then go get training.
Of course.
You know, so you can start to respond to other things. You know, let's get medical training. One of the things I like to say is this, look across your congregation. The more gray hair and brown bellies you see tells you you're going to have a medical. So let's get ready. You know, let's be prepared. Let's get some first aid, CPR. You know, let's buy some medical equipment. Let's take common sense steps to safeguard our congregations.
In light of church security, obviously, you know, we've been talking about, you mentioned being aware, keeping eyes on suspicious individuals. At the same time, the church is called to be kind of a welcoming community, a place where we don't want to just look on everyone with suspicion and be like, you could be a threat to my life. How can we balance the two, being welcoming but also prudent in how we perceive newcomers?
Yeah, this comes back to the people that you choose to serve as part of your safety team. This is not the image of some security guard or cop standing in the corner with their arms crossed, glaring at people as they come in, and you know everyone's under suspicion. That's obviously not it. What we are, you know, I like to refer to it as aggressive greeting. And what that means is this: you see somebody who is new, you don't know them, they're brand new, or somebody who's, you know, maybe shows up a little bit, you know, here and there, but you don't know them very well, go over and shake their hands. You know, welcome to church. I'm so glad you're here. You interact with them and you welcome them to the church and you get to know them a little bit. If there's somebody that's likely to be up to no good, then we change how we respond. A good example is, let's say they're high or they're drunk, right? We're going to have to deal with that, but we only know that because we went over there first to go shake their hand and show them the love of Christ. You know, somebody comes in, they don't look right, right? They got anger on their face. Maybe they're wearing a trench coat or whatever it is, you know, something that points out to us. The thing is this, it's not even on all of that. It's like, hey, that's somebody I don't know. I'm going to go over and make contact with them. And then based on that contact, you're either welcoming and loving them, or you're welcoming, loving them, and then starting to say, okay, what I might need to do something here because there's other indicators of something bad. We can be aggressive greeting, love on people, and then make adjustments when you need to.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to our guest, Chris Maloney, founder of Sheepdog Church Security. Go to sheepdogchurchsecurity.net. Thanks for listening, and I hope you can join us again on Monday at the same time for another edition of His People.